Thanks, Michael. Again, we'd like to recognize co-author Apoorva Bowman, who is obviously one of the hardest working graduate students, Meg, in the state of Texas right now. Raul Medina's in College Station. Rick Menzemeyer is a pest management agent up in Tom Green County. Meg Perigilee, myself, and Charles Sell with USDA. You know, we as entomologists, we talk a lot about thresholds in dealing with thresholds, and I think sometimes our producers think that they're absolutely fixed and that we don't change our minds very often. And if you take a look at what has been happening with Texas in cotton flea hopper thresholds, about every 10 years, it seems like we go back and rethink about what this insect is really doing. The 1920s, it was recognized as a pest. In the 1930s, they finally made an insecticide recommendation. And from there, the thresholds have varied from 15 per 100 plants. In the 1970s, the thresholds went up really high, and I think part of that was driven by the fact that we were dealing with resistant tobacco budworms. We were trying to preserve natural enemies, so we took our thresholds a little bit higher. The 1980s, we decided to drop it back down, and eventually we split it in Texas between East Texas conditions and West Texas conditions. Dennis Ring and John Benedict did a nice study looking at cotton flea hoppers, and they measured it against many things. And at the end of their paper, they talked about how to set up economic injury levels. And one of the things that they talked about was that when we're designing our tests, we really don't include weather, disease, and natural enemies. We tend to set up the test, make our counts, and see what the impact of the insects are. So when we're dealing with our producers, that's probably part of the art that we have in integrated pest management. We really don't deal with continuous infestations. We tend to do like Meg did, try to put them on there one at a time and see what happens. And we don't talk about simultaneous pests. What do we do when we have aphids on there, aphids, flea hoppers, bollworms with simultaneous infestations? And finally, they talked about the appropriate statistical analysis for economic injury levels. We all tend to jump to the ANOVA and see if we can show statistical differences, and they suggested that maybe we should look at regressions and multiple comparisons. We set up two tests. One of them is in East Texas, or what I consider East Texas, and the other one was in West Texas. So these were the conditions for the East Texas. This is on the A&M research farm in Burleson County. Started out with one automatic application. It was made on May the 28th. This is a little bit later than in previous years, and our product of choice was Intruder. The second treatment was two automatic applications, so May 28th and June 4th, three automatics, and then our thresholds that are published in our guides, and then the untreated. So these were the flea hopper populations that were in it, and with all of these tests, the sites get a little bit complicated in what's happening. But you can see the red line that we have here is the printed economic threshold, so that would be two flea hoppers per 20 plants or a 10% infestation. And you can see pretreatment counts, we were well above threshold in all the plots. And I just wanted to show you that we were able to maintain cotton flea hopper populations with our insecticide applications down below threshold. So we were able to, 6 days after the first application, only the untreated check was above threshold. 6 days after the second application, you can see we hit above our economic threshold in that plot, so that's why it got treated. But anyway, you can see that at the end of that 3 weeks of treatment, that we had some differences in the treated plots, which is what we were trying to shoot for. Again, the idea behind the 3 weeks of treatment is when you read the literature and when you talk to most entomologists, they think the first 3 weeks of squaring are the most important. This is what the yields look like. None of them were statistically different. You can see that this was an irrigated plot, so with one application, about 1,000 pounds, and where we had the untreated down to around 950 pounds, or close to a 100-pound difference. This is the 4 years of the study. So this is in the eastern part of the state. 3 years of the study was done in the Blacklands, which was on a dry land situation, and the last year was on an irrigated. But you can see that the yields were fairly similar over those 4 years. With one insecticide application, you see about a 30-pound difference in there. Notice that we don't gain that much between two applications and three applications. Also notice that our thresholds tend to stay up there pretty well with the best treatment. That's only 17 pounds. And even our untreated does extremely well. Most producers would argue with us and say that that 68 pounds is significant, and I think that's where the regressions come in for that part of it. So basically, no statistical differences, but definitely a trend where if we make some applications that we see a benefit to flea hopper control in the eastern part of the state. We did a similar treatment in the western part, and we're about 30 days behind what happens in West Texas as opposed to East Texas. So again, the treatments are exactly the same, just a different time frame. And you can see that this is very typical for our West Texas populations, is that notice that in our pre-treatment counts, we didn't have any flea hoppers at all. Numbers stay extremely low. APURBA is working on the population dynamics, and I think we have some great explanations on why we see what we see. But this is fairly typical. I've been here in previous years where we've actually been above threshold for West Texas. And as you would expect, with no flea hoppers out there, you don't see any benefits from the insecticide applications. The yields in the untreated are actually above. We've talked many times. Sometimes we actually need some insect pressure on there to see yields. It's been pretty well shown through most threshold work that there is a level out there, but no differences in 2008 in Tom Green County, no significant differences in 2008. This is at the end of the 4 years, and you can see at the end of this 4 years that the untreated is numerically anyway is up above, and again not by much, only about 27 pounds between it. Roy Parker and I have talked a lot about why it looks like we see a response with two applications versus just one application by itself, and we will probably continue to try to figure out what's happening there. So taking a look at the regression, we're still trying to figure out how to work the data and to take a look at it. Right now I'm in a minor argument with all of my co-authors about how we should do statistics. When I show this to producers, I always tell producers the classic line, you have lies and damn lies and you have statistics. And I think I'm going to show you the statistics and the damn lies. So when we put all of our plots together, and this is for the East Texas one, we see a very flat line in no significance whatsoever. The R squared is pitiful, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. However, if we manipulate the data a little bit and just take the average of the plot, so rather than having every plot on there and doing the points, this is the average number of flea hoppers over that four-year time for the treatment, you see we have an extremely tight fit. And again, I've got to work with my co-authors on what we're taking a look at here. And the line is extremely good. And you guys are sitting in the audience going, yeah, you're manipulating the data. And you know, I don't know that I believe those numbers. But I want to show you what ends up happening in West Texas when we do the same thing, where we don't see the yield increases with our treatments. Again, a relatively flat line. The R squared's a little bit better, 23. But again, no significance with all those plots. And look what happens when we try to, quote unquote, manipulate the data and put it in. The numbers are still not significant at all. The R squared is fairly low, and the fit on the line is, in my opinion, not very good. So I think the way that I am looking at the data and how I would argue the data is I think we have some information there for producers to show how much damage cotton flea hoppers are actually doing early in the season in East Texas versus West Texas. In that our thresholds in East Texas, I think, are very good. I think we're on a solid position with them. The only questions we may have in East Texas is, how many times do we really need to spray for cotton flea hoppers? And part of the concern why we took up this study is that our producers in Texas with the Roundup Ready system and the Flex system, they're throwing an insecticide in every time they're going across a field. And we are seeing problems with resistance with aphids. I don't think the spider mite issue, we haven't seen it in Texas yet, but I'm sure it's not far behind what we're seeing. And anything that we can do to reduce input costs, I think we'll gain. I think in West Texas, we really need to think about how our thresholds are written. You saw a lot of data from Meg on how we, in our Texas guides, we talk about having a 90% square set the first week, 80% the second week, and no lower than 75% the third week. I think we're a little bit aggressive in West Texas with those types of guidelines. We really haven't had a situation in West Texas where we have had those high acute populations. I have no doubt that they will do damage, and I'm not going to tell a West Texas producer he doesn't need to treat for flea hoppers, but those numbers, I think, need to be extremely high. The other thing that we have questions about this study are the abiotic factors. Where we're doing the studies in Tom Green County, we're the last planted part of the cotton production region in the United States and in Texas. We don't plant until the early May at the earliest, but usually it's mid-May to early June. Our soil temperatures are extremely high. The cotton comes out of the ground immediately. It grows off extremely well. Whereas in East Texas, we plant as early as we can to try to take advantage of the moisture situations, cool conditions, that cotton is under stress. And I think there is a definite impact of how much stress that cotton is under and what early season insects are doing to cotton. Lots of help with this one. You saw the people that Meg has in his lab. Raul Medina has contributed a lot. Couldn't do it without the producers, Ripple Farms, Herbert Reyes, and Jay Jakes, and lots of help from Extension and USDA. Thank you, Mike.
We've got time. Can we take a few questions, Chris?
Sure.
We have questions for Chris this morning.
I know, Meg. I was in the graduate student talk while you were harassing the graduate students on doing that. I think the data is good. I just need some to visit with the statistics people about making sure we're doing what's legitimately done with the study.
I think one of the interesting things we're seeing here this morning are the effects of herbivory, at least at low levels. You tend to actually see a boost on that,
yeah.
And that's been consistent regardless of the insect pest that we've looked at.
Right.
Other questions for Chris? All right, we'll move right along. Thanks,
Chris.